first scripture passage today comes from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning with verse 1. For everything there is a season, and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born, and a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to throw away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. In the lectionary reading today from the Epistle 1 Corinthians chapter 1, beginning with verse 18. And I just have to tell you, this is one of my favorite passages in the New Testament. This was a crucial passage for my pastor. He believed in the foolishness of the gospel, and he had clowns in his office, like about 35 different clowns in the office, because he just saw us as fools for Christ, and that we lived out that call that Christ gives us. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those of us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. Where is the wise person? Where is the teacher of the law? Where is the philosopher of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. A stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles, but to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. For those of you who are visitors today, or for those of you who are members who do not open your mail, there are going to be some changes here at Westminster in the next few weeks. God has called me to a new church. God has called me. That ministers use that language pretty easily. Sometimes I use it and I feel like I'm blaming God, you know? But the foolishness of God is what Corinthians talks about. The foolishness of God. I always like that line, a slight amendation of Jesus' words. That quote, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you strange. It's a little strange sometimes to follow where God calls. Things you don't necessarily plan long in advance, but that seems to be where God calls, and that's where you follow to be a faithful person. God has called me to do a specific work here, and I feel like over the course of the last almost two decades that work is complete. Now, in the next few weeks, it's time for me to have that season of saying goodbye. They don't necessarily give a class on this in seminary, how to say goodbye. The closest thing that comes is teaching about the stages of grief and death and dying. And that too is a strange thing. It's almost like talking about one's own funeral. But for everything, there's a season, and sometimes there's a season for such things. So let's talk about those stages of grief where you lose a loved one. When I first heard about the seven stages of grief, it was presented like it was a timeline, and you went from shock to guilt to pain to bargaining to, you know, and if you were stuck here for a while and you weren't there, they'd kind of look down on you and say, well, maybe he needs therapy. But the truth of the matter is we've come to realize that it's kind of a chaotic thing when you lose somebody, and you may experience three of the same phases in the same day, and then you may repeat one or two or leap ahead, but they're all there. All these different phases when you lose someone you loved. Shock is the first one, sort of a numb disbelief. That numbness is part of what the session experienced. I told the session about this on Monday night. I wanted the session to be the first to know because they are the spiritual leaders of the church. And what they told me was there was a sense of shock, and I believe it. I think that is part of what happens. It keeps us from being overwhelmed all at once. Another phase is a sense of unbelievable pain. Pain, sometimes it almost feels unbearable. And I think it's important to note that it's really important to get in touch with the pain that we have when we lose someone we love. Don't hide it or avoid it or escape from it. It's part of what needs to happen. Otherwise, you bury it and it bubbles up later in unexpected ways. It is painful, and I want to say it's painful to say goodbye to all of you. There's guilt, remorse over things that you did or didn't do with your loved one, and that guilt can be something that haunts people, but there needs to be no guilt in this because this is something that is part of life. I'll talk more about that later. Anger. Some people, there's a phase when anger seems to dominate. You lash out because you've lost a loved one. You place blame somewhere and you feel like somebody must be to blame for this. And I've had people ask, did someone push me out? No, that didn't happen. Or is it that you don't care, you're abandoning us? No, I care very much. I have loved being part of this church community. Or there's another, or did we do something wrong? Like, no, time and time again, this is a church that has done so many things right. And it's been a blessing to be here. Bargaining is another piece of what happens in those phases of grief, bargaining, where you maybe try to bargain with God, if you would just bring my loved one back. Or I did have one of our Sudanese friends come and tell me, I told him I was leaving, and he said, oh no, maybe in a year, maybe two, not now. And I want to say thank you very much. That was one of the nicest things anybody could have said. Depression. Just when depression is that phase when it's not the sharp part of leaving, but it's sort of this dull ache, and you begin to take in all of the things that you've lost. And I want to say, that's that piece. It's been so meaningful to be here for so long. This is the longest church I've ever served in, the longest period of time. And to know you with such depth, to know your families and your family's stories, to share your baptisms and your weddings and your funerals, and to know the story and to see those layers of meaning that are part of human life and part of our faith together and part of what helps us to find God in the midst of it, because we look for meaning. Well, to let go of all of that is very difficult, and I'm sure I'm going to be depressed, and some days I just want to sit behind my door and stare at the walls because the magnitude of the loss is difficult to deal with. But it's important not to cut that off too quickly, because that's part of the process of grieving. Don't let someone try and say, oh, well, it's going to all be okay right away if you're in the midst of that depression, because, you know, to some degree you need to just feel the pain and say it's real. But that's part of the meaning that we come to understand through a loss. It doesn't stay all downward, it does turn upward. You grow more calm, you begin to lighten your spirits, you reconstruct the world as it was, and now it becomes different. You become more functional, your mind starts to work again, and you seek realistic solutions to the problems before you. And in terms of realistic solutions, I'm very pleased that we have Reverend Dr. Jimmy Shelburne as our parish associate. He will be taking the reins here for a few months until the church gets an interim, and I'm very grateful for Doc Wyatt and the presbytery staff who will be helping to find an interim for you all, so you will not be left alone. I'm also grateful that Reverend Ellen Davis she keeps on trying to retire, and we keep on not letting her. So I'm very grateful to Ellen for being willing to step back in and help out in the meantime. Practical sorts of things. And then finally, in those stages of grief, there is a sense of acceptance. A sense of acceptance where we find that hope begins to shine on us again. We accept the reality of the situation and find that sense of hope. Well, you know, as I said, those things don't happen in a timeline, but they kind of jumble around in a bit of chaos. For everything, there is a season. For everything, there is a season, and some of those different seasons have different feelings to them, and I want you to know I'm feeling them all. The shock, the anger, the sadness, the grief, the numbness, the peace, and the hope, all of them are there. But all of these things, for as difficult as they are in what's known as grief, I think grief is the price that we pay for love. And I have truly loved this congregation. And I have truly loved the people of this congregation who are so amazing and wonderful and who have surprised me joyfully time and time again. There was a speaker at my Rotary Club a couple weeks ago, a cardiopulmonary surgeon, and he was telling us about all the wonders that modern medicine is bringing us or about to bring us. And one of the things that he said is the person is alive today who will live to be 150 years old. And the people around my table, we all looked at each other and said, why? Life is hard. You know, maybe the mind grasps what the heart resists, but, you know, for us as people of faith, death is not our enemy. If we didn't move on, no one else could move in. There would be no new artists, poets, or composers. It'd end up being all Bach and Beethoven and Brahms. No Beatles or Beach Boys, Beastie Boys, or Beyonce. If there were no death, life would be boring. Committee meetings, well, they'd never end because we have so much time, nobody'd ever call the question. You remember those old myths of the Greek gods who went around playing silly tricks on people because they were bored with living forever? Same thing happened in Star Trek for the multidimensional character Q, who went around playing inane jokes on the crew of the Enterprise because he lived forever and he was bored. For Christians, as people of faith, we understand life in a different way, and that's part of the foolishness of God, but it's our faith. For us, death is not the final enemy. Death is part of what makes us aware of life. In an airport that had no departures, there'd be no room for arrivals. And I think without growing old, we would never grow up. Our faith is not about holding on to some past that was best. For us, there's a sense of resurrection, that God gives us new beginnings, new creation, new life, new hope, a new day. The newness of God is what we hear in the Bible again and again and again. The philosopher Camus wrote, "In the midst of winter, I have finally learned there is in my heart an invincible summer." I think he almost got it, but not quite. You see, it's not in my heart that there is an invincible summer. It is in the heart of God. And God takes the deadness of our hearts and gives us new life again and again and again. A hope that surprises us. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German theologian who wrote in the concentration camp, he said, "Nothing can make up for the absence of someone whom we love. Nothing can make up for the absence of someone whom we love." It is nonsense to say that God fills the gap. God does not fill it, but on the contrary, God keeps it empty and so helps us keep alive our former communion with each other, even at the cost of pain. The dearer and richer our memories, the more difficult the separation, but gratitude changes the pangs of memory into tranquil joy. End quote. Pain is part of being, part, not all. As William Sloane Coffin said, the key is not to pray that God take away all of our pain, but to ask for the grace to improve the quality of our suffering. There are philosophers, all sorts out there, who ask the question, what makes us human beings different from the animals? What makes human beings unique? And they give answers that we're rational, or that we have language, or that we have the ability to write and conceptualize. There's all sorts of answers on that. I'm not all that deep, but I think this, what makes human beings unique is that no other creature blows out candles on their birthday cake. You know, if you don't blow out the candles, you can't eat the cake. One candle symbolizing every year. And we blow out every candle as a way of symbolizing we're moving beyond the past and into a new year, a new time, a new day. So, friends, I'm blowing out the candles. I'm calling the question. And I'm taking my song and moving on, so a new song can be sung here. And I know it will be beautiful eventually for all of us. I do want you to know how painful this is. I have 19 years of memories. 19 years of wonderful things that we have been able to accomplish together. And 19 years of friendship. And at the end of this month, I will move on. The foolishness of God is that if we listen to God, we may be called to do something new, to move someplace new, to let go of the past, and we may have to suffer to do it. But we trust that new life will come, and the new life will be abundant We live in a world that needs the gospel more than ever. We live in a world that is becoming more crass. It needs the gospel to help it get in touch with the beauty of what God has given to us. We live in a world that's more insensitive to poverty and war. It is as if we just don't think about it or talk about it, and yet all these people are suffering. We need the gospel to help us know the spiritual connections that we have with other human beings and how God is empowering us to be a family together throughout the earth. We live in a world that has less crime, but people are more fearful. We need the gospel to help us understand. Be not afraid. Be not afraid just because they're different from you. We live in a world that has more peace, but less joy. We need the gospel to help us get in touch with the joy that God can bring to us. And we live in a world that has more information, but less ability to tell the truth. One of the great goals of the Presbyterian Church is to preserve the truth. And that is part of what the world needs desperately now. The world needs the gospel, and the world needs Westminster Church. And I look forward to hearing from a distance the wonderful things that are going to be happening here through your new pastor and through your new life together. The gospel needs to keep on rising again from the dead, and I look forward to the blessing that you will receive in that time. I've been known to quote a movie or two, so let me just end with Humphrey Bogart. My favorite movie maybe of all time is Casablanca, where Bogart's playing Rick and he's talking with the local police chief, Louis. And Louis asks Rick, "What in heaven's name brought you to Casablanca?" And Rick says, "My health. I came to Casablanca for the waters." And Louis says, "The waters? What waters? We're in the desert." And Rick says, "I was misinformed." Well, I grew up in the winter snowstorms of Illinois, but no matter how bad it was, we were always shown pictures on TV, on the newspaper, with the tagline, "Well, it may be bad here, but if you want to see people who really have it bad, look at this raging blizzard in Nebraska." Nebraska was our poster child for winter storms. But for those of us who love winter, it sounds wonderful. So when God and your search committee called me here as one who loves the depths of winter, I was so excited to move to the Arctic. Friends, I was misinformed. It's been like Miami here, and, you know, every Sunday I see Scott Colburn in his Hawaiian shirt, and I go, "It's not what I thought." So I'm heading north to Minnesota, where I hope to get some decent snowfall. But I was not misinformed about the character of this congregation. I was told that this was a congregation that was spiritually mature, and you have proven yourselves to be that again and again and again. I've never been disappointed in the spiritual maturity that leaders in this congregation have shown. There's a depth of intelligent faith here that is part of what the world needs, and it's part of what I've needed, and this place has been a blessing in that way. There's a civility to this congregation, a civility of how you treat one another and treat your staff. There's a graceful love and a loving grace that you model towards one another, and you have modeled it towards me, and I have felt that loving grace. You have a passion for caring, and you care for one another well. You've found ways, large and small, to let your caring be known. You're generous and giving. And that is part of where the rubber meets the road in faith. That generosity and that giving is part of what allows the church to do some amazing things. And it shows the depths of your love. And you have been involved in one another's lives and been involved in the world. As the Bible says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. And you have shown that that is what you're about, loving the Lord our God and loving our neighbors as ourselves. The people of Westminster have been a breathtaking blessing to me again and again and again. And the people who I've worked with on the staff have been a blessing also, but what I find remarkable is those who have come on the staff, I've heard so many of them come to me after they've been here for a few months or a couple of years, and they come and say, "This place is different. It's really wonderful to be here." That's how I've felt. And it's the foolishness of God that shapes people differently, that gives them different values. The foolishness of God that makes us not like other people was the foolishness of God that called me to Nebraska, with or without winter, and the foolishness of God that has called me to leave. The foolishness of God is wiser than all the wisdom of the world, and I am grateful to God for all 19 years, and I am grateful to all of you.